This is. Thank you, I think, Andy, and thank you for all your work. I've been described as many things, both to my face and I'm sure behind my back. I'm not sure leader of the gang has ever been one until tonight, so that's really wonderful. Birshus HaRosh HaYeshiva, Birshus HaRabbanim. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a particular and poignant pleasure to welcome you all to this program marking the 36th Yahrzeit of Rabbi Dr. Samuel Belkin, the second president of Yeshiva University. I am particularly honored to welcome the mishpacha, the family of Dr. Belkin, back to its home. I'm delighted that among you are students who are currently studying at the yeshiva. Please God, I've met several students who, Yirtzeh Hashem, will be making this yeshiva their home, even as it was his. And as the students, the Talmidim of the yeshiva who are here, together with me, share the sadness of not having known Dr. Belkin. I met Dr. Belkin once when I was doing some work on the fourth floor of First Hall, and I was summoned upstairs because the president needed a minyan. So I had the zechus of davening mincha with him. I also had the zechus, I showed the family in my office, there's a picture of Dr. Belkin with my father-in-law, Zichrono Livracha, Irving Ribner, who was a graduate of the Yeshiva College class of 1937 and was the president of the Alumni Association. So I keep him with me always. I also want to acknowledge, by the way, the presence, I saw him, of Dr. Sheldon Sokol, a longtime vice president of Yeshiva University, but also a confidant, server, and right hand of Dr. Belkin, and even executor of his estate, who always, and through my years at Yeshiva, whenever he would speak of Dr. Belkin, and it would be frequently, it would be with something beyond reverence. So we're honored that you are here this evening as well as all others. So there is a strange, almost inexplicable connection that I feel with my predecessors. It's almost a metaphysical connection. Dr. Lamsel Sein Gesunden Stark, my teacher, has often taught me that nobody can understand what it's like to be president of yeshiva unless you've done it, and it's a small club. And one of the moments that recurringly I treasure is when we have time together and there's an instant understanding. But somehow, through our conversations as well, it's not just that I have Dr. Norman Lamb, Libodei L'chaim, with me. I also sense the presence of Dr. Belkin and Dr. Revel. It's an incredible sense of humility and some degree of pachad with which I occupy the seat that they occupied. The tenure of Dr. Belkin was marked by the coming of age of yeshiva as a university, the flourishing of the yeshiva, of Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. He opened Stern College for Women, the first school of higher learning for women, for Jewish women, that exists. It was his vision that brought us the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. And in fact, it was also his determination that created the Benjamin N. Cardozo School of Law. During his tenure, the Community Service Division of Yeshiva University opened with a mandate to encourage Rabbanim from YU to occupy the pulpits of America, to start new communities, to engage in adult education, to begin Shabbatonim and youth programs, and the Yeshiva University Synagogue Council youth. In many ways, it was his vision that was the vision for the Center for the Jewish Future, which just took place a little bit more in the future than his time. And in so many ways, Dr. Belkin gave both to Dr. Lamb, his successor, and to me, an extraordinary yeshiva that constitutes the heart of a great university. And it's been our privilege to vouchsafe that that institution and guide it on its journey through new times with the same values and the same commitments and the same responsibilities to the world. There's so many things I could quote from Dr. Belkin, but the one that I just wanted to share with you, one paragraph. He wrote, "The philosophy of yeshiva has always been that theory must be translated into practice, and that learning must lead to moral and ethical disciplines based upon the divine law of the Torah. Above all, we are cognizant of the fact that in order that the teacher may exercise a parental influence on the student, the parent must also assume the time-honored role of teacher." So the notion of believing that we are in a partnership with parents, therefore we have a chelek in what they do, but that we can succeed as long as Klal Yisrael takes its responsibility seriously, and that our mandate is to teach our students to know Torah and to learn Torah and to be committed to a life of Torah and to believe that that Torah has to inform our responsibilities in the greater world, remains his legacy, our challenge, and your heritage. It is always a great honor for me to present the Chancellor in the Rosh HaYeshiva, the third president of Yeshiva University, Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's an emotional thing for me to speak about Dr. Belkin. He was the first personality I met when I came to yeshiva. He gave me a bechina, and he put me in his class. And that was the last class that he taught. That was the last year that he gave. We learned Yevamos that year, the same as the yeshiva is learning now. And his shiurim were all one format. He would give the shiur, and then he would close it. And before he left the students out of the classroom, he would say, "The sachakel is," he summarized everything in two sentences. So you saw that there was a mind at work. Not only did he spew concepts in Talmud, but he also knew how to summarize it and put it all together so that the students would remember it better. I was very proud of my personal relationship with him. He was, I think only once did he get angry with me a little bit, and it wasn't very serious at all. But it was a good relationship. Recently I discovered a letter that he wrote to me, and I had forgotten all about it. It was probably one of the last letters that he wrote. And he told me to thank my sons who were helping him when he was in the hospital, and they came to see him. And he signed it off, "Your friend, Samuel Belkin." To me, that was a moving thing, because he showed a sense of friendship in that, which I appreciated and I enjoyed. I will always, in my mind, the president of yeshiva, forgive me, Mr. President, is always Dr. Belkin. He was my president and always remained for me that role of being my leader, my inspirer, and my teacher, my Rebbe. So I'm sorry that I used to give a shiur every year at this time in the Zeresheit in memory of him. The last two or three years I've not been able to do it because of I can't speak for that length of time, my voice won't carry. But I'm pleased that Rabbi Schechter, May of Yesem Shana, is here with us and to give this year. So I'm looking forward to it with great interest. Thank you.
I did not have the schus to meet Dr. Belkin, who passed away when I was approximately 11 years old. But every single day, on the way to my office on the sixth floor of this building, I pass a picture of Dr. Belkin, and he always stares right at me with this very stern expression, which says to me, "Stop fooling around and get to work." And we're very grateful to the family of Dr. Belkin for sponsoring this extremely important lecture for our yeshiva. In Parshas Tzav, that we're going to read the Shabbos, says, "Eish tamid tukad al mizbeach lo sichbeh." The fire ignited by the founders of our yeshiva, inspired by the memory of our namesake, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, must never be extinguished. The Yerushalmi notes, Af b'masa'ot, even in travel and transition in the passage of time and generations, we must keep the original fire of the Holy Tabernacle burning. We therefore pay tribute to those seminal figures who helped create, sustain, and illuminate our Mikdash Me'at, our miniature temple here at Yeshiva. Rabbi Dr. Samuel Belkin, who was appointed as a Rosh Yeshiva in 1936 and as president of the Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary in 1943, epitomized the Torah Umada philosophy of Yeshiva University and ensured that the flame of Torah would inform and inspire all of the studies and pursuits of the students in the yeshiva. This year, we are particularly pleased that at the behest of Rabbi Lamb, our Rosh Kolel, Mori Varabi HaRav Schechter, has agreed to deliver the lecture, the shiur, on this important occasion, honoring the yahrzeit of Dr. Belkin. Rav Schechter serves as an ultimate embodiment of the ideals that were nurtured by Dr. Belkin, Zichrono Livracha, bringing his Torah erudition to enlighten every area of life and every subject of study. Rav Schechter, if I can just add, whom we often take for granted, like the air that we breathe, is truly a vital and indispensable force at our yeshiva, who, like the fire in the Mishkan, provides the Torah fuel for our students in our yeshiva, baboker, baboker, each and every day without fail, enabling all of us to appreciate and benefit from the sacred tradition of our yeshiva that was embodied by Dr. Belkin. May we continue to merit the glow and the bounty of Rav Schechter's presence at yeshiva for many decades to come. Rav Schechter.
Thank you very much. Dr. Belkin learned in Radin, and the main thing they learned there was Noshim and Ezekin, but I'm not going to give a shiur on the things that he spent all of his lifetime on. Rav Soloveitchik, when he had Yahrzeit for his father, always used to give a shiur on Kriya Shema and Kiddush and Havdalah and Benching and so on, everything on Or HaChaim. And after many years, he said that's not really what he learned with his father. He learned Noshim and Ezekim and Kutchim with his father. So one year he decided he's going to give a shiur on Shtaris. Heavy duty, heavy, heavy Noshim and Ezekim, Shtaris. And the Olam got lost. The people couldn't follow because the Balabatim, hundreds of Balabatim used to come. And they couldn't understand it. So the next year he went back to Or HaChaim and he said last year was an attempt and it failed and he's going to go back to Or HaChaim. I remember once the Koyle was learning Yevamos, and we used to meet in the building across the street in the first hall. And I don't know which one of the deans was marrying off his daughter, so the Chasana was across the street on the lawn. We used to have a lawn across the street. Now we have buildings there, no room for a lawn. And Dr. Belkin was at the Chasana, it was on a Sunday afternoon, and apparently he was bored. He wasn't interested in hanging around all the deans. So he came to the building to look, where is the Kolo? So the Kolo was learning Yevamos, he found us, and someone was in the middle of giving a shiur. So I remember what he discussed at that time. I said it over in shiur this year. What's the definition of Kinyan Iser? We have a Kinyan Iser and a Nebuchadnezzar, so whoever was saying the shiur, Dr. Belka didn't like what he said, so he gave his definition of what a Kinyan Iser is. But I'm going to be talking about in Yoni Or HaChaim. I'll talk about the topic of Machine Matzah. Machine Matzah has various issues involved. Different shilas were brought up over the last over 100 years, 150 years. I'd like to concentrate on one aspect of the issue, namely that the Pasuk tells us, Shmartem es ha-matzos, that we have to have shmura matzah. In order to fulfill the mitzvah matzah, you have to have shmura matzah. What's the definition of shmura matzah? So there are two levels of interpretation. Number one, shimer mechimutz. You have to be careful that it doesn't turn into chametz. And then number two, that it has to be made lishma. We need asir lishma. Several achrayim suggest that the second aspect that we require asir lishma, maybe it's only an asmachta midrabbanan. Maybe it's not menatar. But bottom line, you need asir lishma. Whether it's menatar midrabbanan, you do need asir lishma. There's an additional level of interpretation on the Pasuk, which is more famous than the Pashup Shat in the Pasuk, Shmartem es ha-mitzvos, the mitzvah bo liyotchal tach mitzeno, that when a person has an opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah, he shouldn't be lazy, he shouldn't postpone, he should do it right away. He shouldn't let the mitzvah become chametzdik by waiting too long. But that's an additional level of interpretation on the pasuk. The pasuk reads, "Ushmartem es ha-matzos." We have to have shmura matzah. So there was a big debate regarding machine matzah, whether this is considered asiyah lishma. So when you put the flour and the water in the machine doesn't make the matzahs on its own. The machine is not an independent being. Someone has to push the button. So the question was, when a Jewish person pushes the button and he says, "I'm making the matzah lishma," is that considered asiyah lishma? Is that sufficient to be considered asiyah lishma? What's the issue? So normally, when you need matzahs, the hand matzahs, you do the lisha all by yourself. Then you shape the matzah all by yourself. Then you put it into the oven. The baking, the heat, obviously is done by the heat of the oven. But the other activities, the mixing of the water into the flour and the kneading and the making the correct size, that's all done by the person. So here the question is, if you push a button and the machine does this, you have what we call in Talmudic terminology, you have a koyach hacham miurabo, you have the electrical force, the electrical energy is helping out over here to do the asiyas hamatzah. So what is the status of a person who harnesses some other koyach, another force for his purposes? Is it considered as if I did the whole activity? Is it considered as if I baked the matzahs myself? Because if you need asiyah lishma, so you need that it should be considered I did the maisa. So whether is koyach hacham yurabai, when you harness another extraneous force, a natural force, over here the force of electricity, is that considered my asiyah or not? So the Gemara has a discussion regarding Eish. We have the first Mishnah in Bava Kamma, the four Ovis Nezikin. One of them is Eish. So the Gemara says, what is the unique characteristic of Eish, to know what is it told of the Eish, told the same Kayotze Bohem. So the Gemara says, Eish has a koyach hacham yurabai. So let's say if a person leaves something on his rooftop and he knows that the wind is going to blow and he's negligent, and the wind blows and as the thing is flying down, it smashes someone's window. So that's considered Eish. Even though there's no fire, the damage was caused by the pressure that the heavy item that was on the rooftop smashed into someone else's window. But that has the status of a tolda de Eish. It's not the Abav Eish. The original Eish is where you use the fire. But this is the tolda of Eish, because the identifying characteristic of Eish is that you have koyach hacham yurabai. So the Gemara has the famous dispute in the second parak in Bava Kamma, an argument between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. if a person takes a torch and he burns down someone else's home, that's adama mazik. That's not called Eish. He's mazik befer b'miskavim, b'mezer b'miskavim. So of course, the din is that Eish is potter on tom. Each one of the Avos Nezikin has a quirk, has a certain p'tur. So Eish is potter on tom, only if it's Eish. If it's adama mazik, he's chayv on tom. So we're talking about a case, not the person takes a torch and he burns down the other person's house. That's outright arson, that's adama mazik. We're talking, a person made a barbecue, he was negligent, and he wasn't careful enough to put out the flame from all of the coals, then he goes away. And then accidentally the wind blows and the Eish burns down the whole city. So the Gemara has this machlokes of Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whether Isha Mishum Chitzov, is it considered as if I had shot an arrow? Even though I'm harnessing the force of the wind, but maybe Koach HaChem Yorubai relates back to me, so it's considered Maisa HaAdam, so it's an Adam HaMazik. What do you say? No, Isha Mishum HaMono. It's only Mamon Hamazi. The accepted opinion always is, the Gemara tells us, whenever there's a dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, there were many disputes. Rabbi Yochanan was the Rebbe, Reish Lakish was the Talmud. So in the overwhelming majority of the cases, in the next generations, they took the consensus. So the vote was always like Rabbi Yochanan, with three exceptions to the rule. This is not one of the exceptions to the rule. So we pass like Rabbi Yochanan, the Isha Mishum Chitzov. If a hezek occurred through the assistance of the Koyach Acham Yorubai, there was another natural force involved, so we considered that Adam HaMazik. So here there's a famous dispute among the Rishonim whether this din of Rabbi Yochanan that we have accepted, La Locha, that Isho Mishum Chitzov, if a person is negligent and a hezek occurs because of the wind blowing on the coals and spreading the fire, is this only a din in Nezikin, or is it a din in Kol HaTorah Kula in other areas of Halacha as well? So when you learn the Gemara, the simple reading of the Gemara seems to indicate that the din of Rabbi Yechanan, Isha Mishum Chitzav, applies in all areas of Halacha. It's not restricted only to Odom HaMazik, not restricted only to Baba Kama and Nezikin. It's in Kol HaTorah Kula, it's considered Maisa HaAdam. The Koach HaMiurba relates back to be, it's Maisa HaAdam. The one who disagrees, the one who says it's only a din, we would have never heard of this opinion. The one who disagrees is the Chidush Haran on Sanhedrin, on Daf Ayin Vav, and the reason why it became so well known now is because Rav Avivah Soloveitchik wrote a sefer on the Rambam, and Rav Avivah's Torah is read in all the yeshivas, Chassidish and yeshivas, Misnagd yeshivas, everybody reads what Rav Avivah Soloveitchik has to say, and he made a big spiel about this. So he has a whole essay supporting the Ran. He explains the Ran's opinion, and he shows how it can fit into the Gemara. Simple reading of the Gemara is against the Ran, so Rav Avivah explains how the Ran had read the Gemara. But the generally accepted opinion is not like that Ran. The overwhelming majority of the Rishonim are of the opinion that Isha Mishum Chitzav is not restricted only to Inyan and Nezikin. It applies in Kol HaTorah Kula. See, here also, the Pashtus is that if I harness the natural force of the electrical energy to bake the matzah, so that the action relates back to me, and it's considered koicha, it's considered maisa ha'odam, and we would be able to declare that the asiyas ha'matzah was made lishmo. That's the pashtus. In Hilchas Shabbos, there's also a dispute. If I harness a natural force in order to do a malacha, whether that's a violation of Shabbos. So most of the poskim are of the opinion, the Eglei Tal has a discussion of this, most of the poskim are of the opinion that in Hilchas Shabbos, for sure, even if one should assume that in other areas of Halacha, Isha Mishum Chitzav does not apply, that it doesn't relate back to me, it's not Maisa HaAdam, but as far as Hilchas Shabbos is concerned, thank you, most would assume that it does relate back to me, it is considered a Malacha. Why? So we have one of the 39 malachas is Zoreh V'ruach Misayaito. A person wants to separate the ochel from the psolus and he throws it up when the wind is blowing. And the psolus is lighter than the ochel, so the wind will blow away the psolus and the ochel will fall down. He's separating the kernels of grain from the shells around the grain, so the shells are lighter. So that's one of the 39 malachas, Zoreh V'ruach Misayaito. So in the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah quotes a line from the Talmud Yerushalmi, that if a person knows that it's the wind is blowing, and he spits in the wind, and the wind scatters the spits, so that constitutes a malacha. So the simple reading of the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch is that this is a violation of Zoreh V'ruach Misayaito. So the Eglei Tal has his strong kasha, all the Achronim ask, isn't this passage in Yerushalmi against the Talmud Bavli? Yeah, but every so often you have a machlokes between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The world won't come to an end if it's a machlokes. But the question is, does it seem to contradict the Bavli? The Bavli says that there are three of the 39 malachas that seem to be a repeat. The Gemara says, Haina Zorah, Haina Berer, Haina Merakeh. In all three cases, you're separating Eichel from Solas. So the Gemara asks the question, why do you need 39 malachas? Three of them are repeat. So you should only have 37 malachas and the other two are just to repeat the borer. So from the fact that the Gemara poses the question, you see that the Talmud Bavli assumed that the definition of the malacha of Zorah is not just to scatter something in the wind. The person spits in the wind and the wind scatters the spit. So he's not separating Echel from Solus. It's all the same thing. So the Eglei Tal raises the question, doesn't the Yerushalmi seem to have a different definition for the malacha of Zorah from the Bavli? So he wants to assume, yes, it's a machlokes between the Bavli and Yerushalmi. So on that Ramah, when the Ramah quotes this Yerushalmi, the Mishnah Berurah quotes several Achrayim who gave a different interpretation. In Yerushalmi, Yerushalmi is talking about a person who's spitting b'shus harabim, and the wind is going to carry a dalan amas b'shus harabim. The malacha that he's violating is not Zorah. The malacha he's violating is mabed dalan amas b'shus harabim. But the Rishalmi quotes Zorah just to demonstrate that when you have a Koyach Hacham Yoraboy, it relates back to me in Hilchas Shabbos. You shouldn't say that Koyach Hacham Yoraboy is not called my Maisa, and for Melech Shabbos, You have to have a Maisa Malocha. So Yerushalmi just proves from the fact that you have an institution of Zohra that in all the other 38 Malochas also, when you have a Korach Hacham Yoruboy, it's considered my Maisa Malocha. So for Shabbos purposes, for sure, we would assume, most Achranim would assume, that when you have a Korach Hacham Yoruboy, the Maisa relates back to me. But even leaving out Hilchus Shabbos, most of the Rishonim assume, not like Chidush Aran, that Ravel V'Lesolovetchi quoted, most are of the opinion that Koyach HaChem Yoruboy is not a din that's only restricted to Nezikin, it's a din in Kol HaTorah Kulam. And I harness some outside force, a natural force, to help me accomplish a certain result, that's considered my Maisa. So the question that the Poskim raise is, the Gemara in three places makes a distinction between Koyach Rishon and Koyach Sheni. The Gemara in one place in Chulin, towards the end of Chulin, in Perek Kolabos, the Gemara is talking about Netilus Yadayim. Then in the beginning of Chulin, the Gemara is talking about Tilcha Shchita. Then in Sanhedrin, the Gemara talks about the laws of Ratzach, one who murders someone else. So the Gemara says, in all three cases, by Netilus Yadayim, as well as by Shchita, as well as by... thank you. As well as by Ritzicha, the halacha requires koyach gavre, and if a person has a body of water and there's a dam there to prevent the water from leaking out, and someone picks up the dam and the water starts gushing out, and then somebody drowns because of the fact that I tied someone up, and then I pick up the dam, and the water gushes out, and he drowns because of that. Or a person has a wheel, and by picking up the dam, the water flows, and the wheel starts to turn. And he has a conveyor belt where he has chickens going, and the wheel has knives on it. And he succeeds in accomplishing shchita by this contraption, by this machine. Quite an advanced machine. So the Gemara discusses, will the shchita be acceptable or not? Or the same thing if a person does until the yadayim in such a way, by picking up a dam, letting the water flow, is that considered koyach gavra or not? So the Gemara distinguishes between koyach rishon as opposed to koyach shein. If it's koyach rishon, then it relates back to me. It's considered my mice and it's considered koyach gavra. If it's only koyach sheini, then it does not relate back to me. So what in the world is the definition of koyach rishon and koyach sheini? It's very unclear. So Rashi, on all of the three cases in the Gemara, Rashi on Sanhedrin, by the Gemara by Ritzeach, and Rashi in the beginning of Chulin, when the Gemara is talking about Shchita, and Rashi in Perek Kol HaBosom, the Gemara is talking about Netilas Yadayim, Rashi in all the three locations translates as follows. If the wheel that's going to turn with the knives, that they're going to shecht the chickens that are coming on the conveyor belt, or if the person whom I'm interested in drowning is right near the dam, and I pick up the water and it doesn't have to travel too far, so that's called Koyach Rishon. But if the wheel is very far down the river, and it's going to take a long time till the water is going to reach the wheel. Or, if the person whom I want to drown, I tied him up and I put him very far down, and by picking up the dam, the water has to flow a long distance in order to get there, in order to drown him, so that's called Koyach Sheni. We know the Yad Ramah on Sanhedrin is very unhappy with Rashi. He says it doesn't make any sense, and he gives a different definition, and the Yad Ramah's definition has become more popular today. Now that people discuss a lot of aspects in Hilchus Shabbos. But the question is, if one assumes like Rashi, what exactly is the difference between Koyach Rishon and Koyach Sheni? How far away does it have to be that it should be considered Koyach Sheni? And how close does it have to be that we should consider it a Koyach Rishon? If it's Koyach Rishon, then it relates back to me, it's considered Koyach Gavra, I did it. And if it's Koyach Sheni, we say it happened by itself, it's only Groma. I indirectly caused this Shchita to occur, and it's not called Koyach Gavra. So it's very unclear in Rashi. That's exactly the taina of the Yad Ramah. How close does the wheel have to be, or how far away does it have to be? So the Dvar Avraham, the Kovne Rav, the last Rav in Kovne, has a tshuva where he discusses a related topic. He says, we have a pasuk in Chumash, a difficult pasuk in the middle of Chumash, Ve'yikra, Ach mayon abor mikveh mayim yihiyah tohor. So the simple translation of the pasuk is that if somebody is tamei and he wants to go to mikveh to become tahor, so he has an option of either being tovel in a mikveh or being tovel in a mayon. A mikveh has to be kovu v'kaimi. The water has to be stagnant. You have to have a crack in the ground, eshborin, a shever, a crack in the ground. The water has to be sitting there. And if the water is zochlin, if it's rolling, then it's all deraisa. It's not considered a mikveh. The word mikveh by definition means kovu v'kaimi. The water is standing still. It's stagnant. So one can either be tovel in a mikveh or tovel in a mayon. A mayon is where the source of the water. A mikveh, the source of the water is the rain or the melting snows. And a mayon means the source of the water is from under the ground. You have a well, you have a spring, a fountain where the water comes from under the ground. The Tanoim knew that there's a water cycle. All the water comes from the sky. But so the Mishkanos Anchor discusses, when do you call it a mayon, when do you call it a mikveh? That's another problem. So the simple translation of the pasuk reads, Ach mayon, a bar mikveh mayim, whether you go to be tovel in a spring, in a fountain, or you go to be tovel in a mikveh, either way, yihya tahar, the person who will be tovel, will become tahar, and the water of the mikveh, the mayon, will not become tummy. The water, don't say when I walk into the puddle of water, I'm a tummy all the water. No, I become tahar, and the water will remain tahar, and the water will be metahir me. That's the simple translation of the pasuk. So the Gemara in Zvachim, of all places, we don't have an explicit Mishnah in Mikvois where this din is spelled out. The Gemara in Zvachim, of all places, interprets that this is what the following din is, what the Mishnah is saying. That there's an additional level of interpretation. The Torah Shebaal Peh has additional level of interpretation on this pasuk, namely, that when you're trying to construct a mikveh, the hishabus ha-mikveh, the formation of the mikveh has to be the dovah she'ena mekabel tumah. Let's say a person is a dovah ha-mekabel tumah. See, if you carry buckets of water and you throw the water into the mikveh, so we know that's no good, that's maim shuvim. That's explicit in Mishnah. Whatever the water is carried in a container, so maim shuvim is pasul, either pasul menatara, pasul menderabanon, a whole discussion in the Shulchan Aruch. But what if a person doesn't carry the water in a bucket? Let's say there's water all over the place and I take a broom and I sweep the water into the mikveh. So if a human being who is a dovah ha-mekabel tumah is responsible for causing the water to go directly into the mikveh, if I push the water on the ground from one location to the other, and then it rolls into the mikveh, so then there's no paslus. But the Gemara says in Zochim, if I push it directly into the mikveh, so hisavus ha-mikveh, the creation of the mikveh, was done ayidei dovah ha-mekabel tumah. A person is a dovah ha-mekabel tumah, so the whole mikveh is no good. This is based on this additional level of interpretation in the pasuk, which is clearly not lefi pshuta. Pshuta means a person is tovel at either at a mikveh or a mayon, so the person yihyeh tahor, the person will be tahor. And this interpretation is assuming that the word yihyeh doesn't mean he will become tahor. It means that his savus, the creation of the mikveh, should be ayidei dovah she'ena mekabel tumah, ayidei tahara. Or let's say it's raining, and the rain is not going to fall into the mikveh. I have a location, I have a mikveh, and the raining is all over the place. So if I put, let's say, I put a shtender, I put a piece of furniture, I lean it in such a way, see, this piece of furniture doesn't hold any water. So if you cause this piece of furniture to have water fall into the mikveh, it's not going to be maim shuvim. The water can't be contained. There's no element of containing over here. But if I lean the shtender near the mikveh in such a way that when the rain falls, the rain is going to bounce on the shtender and bounce directly into the mikveh, and the shtender is a kli, it's a dovah ha-mekabel tumah, so the hisavus ha-mikveh, the creation of the mikveh was accomplished like the dovah ha-mekabel tumah. So the Gemara in Zvachim, Adav Chafei, interprets that this is what the Mishnayos say is not acceptable. It's very surprising why it's in Zvachim and why there's no explicit Mishnah about this. The Gemara interprets that that's what the Mishnayos are saying. So the Dvar Avram has a discussion about a modern Shaila. He died in the middle of the Second World War in the Kovne ghetto. So he discusses, what if you have an electrical, mechanical system where by pushing a button, you will cause a pump to bring the water from whatever, from the river, into the mikveh. Do you say that by a person pushing the button, the whole activity relates back to him? It's considered as if he caused... The water was never held in a container, so it's not Mayim Shuvim, but do you say it's considered as if I did the whole Maisa? I caused the water to go from the river, from the faucet, whatever, into the mikveh. So that's called Hisavus HaMikvah Yidei Dovah HaMekabel Tumah. The person is Dovah HaMekabel Tumah. Or do you say no, that it's considered a Groma. It doesn't relate back to me. So the Dvar Avram assumes that we should distinguish between Koach Rishon and Koach Sheni, and then he has to figure out what did Rashi mean over here. How close does this wheel have to be to the dam? When I pick up the dam and the water gushes and the wheel starts turning, how far away does the wheel have to be that it should be considered Koach Sheni? And how close does it have to be that we should consider it Koach Rishon? So he's guessing. No one knows exactly what Rashi is driving at, so he's guessing. So he suggests as follows. Maybe if you would pick up the dam just for 2 seconds and then you would put it down again, how much would be accomplished with that initial amount of water flowing out? So if you pick up the dam for just for 5 seconds, let's say, and then you put it down, if that water would accomplish that the wheel should start to turn, so that's called Koach Rishon. But if I pick up the dam and I leave it up, in the mele, the water keeps on going and flowing and flowing and flowing, and it's only because of the fact that I left up the dam and I didn't put it down again. That's why the wheel is so far away, or the person whom I want to kill, the fellow whom I tied up, is so far away. So it's only because I picked up the dam and the water keeps on flowing. So that's called Koach Sheni. So then it doesn't relate back to me. So he thinks over here, we should make such a distinction, that if I would push the button of the pump to cause the water to fill up in the mikveh, if I would push the button and it would start functioning, and then 5 seconds later I would close the button. So the amount of water that would fill into the mikveh in those 5 seconds, that's called my maisa. That's called hesavas hamikvah yedidovah hamakabel tumah. But the rest of the water that keeps on coming in because I didn't stop the electrical system, I let it keep on going, so he considers that koach sheni, and he says that would be considered a grumah. This is what he suggests. So it's interesting that Dvar Avram is making a major assumption over here, making two assumptions, both of which are highly questionable. Number one assumption, he is assuming that the difference between Koach Rishon and Koach Sheni doesn't only apply, the Gemara only has a difference in three cases, regarding Shechita, regarding the Tilus Yadayim, and regarding Ritzicha. These are the only three sources in the Gemara. So the Dvar Avram thinks that it's not restricted only to these three cases where the Gemara formulates a statement that you need Koach Gavra, a human force. He assumes that's the din in Kol HaTarakula. Whenever we're discussing is this Maisa HaAdam or is not Maisa HaAdam, so whenever the Halacha requires Maisa HaAdam, whenever it's Koach Sheni, it's not called Maisa HaAdam. The Dvar Avram is in good company. There is a Tosfos in the beginning of Bava Kamma, on the Pehemad base, but Tosfos assumes like that. Tosfos discusses a situation where you have an Adam Hamazik Ayidei Koach Sheni. A person causes Hezik to someone else through, okay, he picks up the dam and the water starts going and he leaves the dam up, he didn't put it down. And the Hezik is caused because of the fact that there was a Koach Sheni. A half an hour later, the water kept on gushing and that's what caused the Hezik. So Tosfos assumes that Dovah Pashut, that if you have an Odom Hamazik, Ayidei Koach Sheni, it's called Groma Benezik and you would be Potter. So the Chazon Ish writes a comment on that Tosfos. He doesn't have any Rishonim who disagree. He just says, with all due respect, he doesn't agree with Tosfos. He says, how did Tosfos take this out of the Gemara? It's out of context. The Gemara says over here, in these three cases, Shechita, Netilus Yadayim, and Ritzicha, there's a special halacha that you need Koach Gavra. In all other areas of halacha, there's no din that you need Koach Gavra, there's just a din you need Maisa HaAdam. So the Chazon Ish is that Maisa HaAdam and Koach Gavra are two different things. Tosfos apparently thinks, and the Dvar Avram apparently thinks, that they're identical. Koach Gavra is Aramaic, and Maisa HaAdam is Hebrew. A Gavra is an Adam, the same thing. So Tosfos equates the two, that whenever you need Maisa HaAdam, you need Koach Gavra. Whenever it's Koach Sheni, it's not Koach Gavra, so it's not Maisa HaAdam. So the Chazon Ish assumes that that's not correct. You can have something that's called Maisa HaAdam, but in order to be considered Koach Gavra, you need something over and above Maisa HaAdam. And he quotes that that's what it says in Yerideya, in Hilcha Shechita. The Shulchan Aruch, the whole Chelek Aleph Yerideya, is all based on the Rashba and the Toras Habayis. So the Rashba and the Toras Habayis quotes the following. The Rashba often quotes things from the Balei HaTosfos that we don't have any other source for. We're missing this Tosfos. So the Rashba quotes the following. In the name of Tosfos, there is a Gemara in Bava Kamma in the end of the second parak, and the Gemara talks about a person is sitting and he has a big stone on his lap, and he's reading the newspaper, whatever. He forgot all about it that he has something on his lap. Then he gets up, b'shoygeg, and the stone starts rolling, and it smashed somebody's window. So is he chai mitam orem amazik anam? So the Gemara says yes. Odom would li'oilam be mishegig be mezid be mirnis be mirotzon. Orem amazik has to pay, even if he didn't realize that he was causing a hezik. So you see that when the person gets up and he had something on his lap and it rolls and he wasn't paying attention, that's called Maisa Ha'odim, and that's called an Anam HaMazik. That's not called Groma Ben Ezekin. A Groma Ben Ezekin is Potter. That's Maisa Ha'odim. So the Rashba in the Torah Sabbais quotes in the name of Tosfos, and this Rashba is quoted in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Shechita. What if a person is sitting, minding his own business, reading a sefer, reading the newspaper, and he has a sharp knife on his lap? He gets up and the knife flies, he jumps up and the knife starts flying and it shechts a chicken. And it did a perfect job shechting the chicken. Okay. The Shulchan Aruch has to talk, the Gemara has to talk about all possible cases, even if it's never going to happen in a million years. So the Shulchan Aruch has this shayla. The Gemara says in Baba Kama that that's Maisa Ha'odim, it's not a mamazik, it's not a grama. So what about by shechita? Is it called Maisa HaShechita? So the Rashba quotes in the name of the Baalei HaTosfos that they think that it's not acceptable for shechita, because by shechita it's not sufficient to label the action as a Maisa Ha'odim. It has to be something over and above Maisa Ha'odim. It has to be Koach Gavra. So the Shulchan Aruch is quoting from Tosfos that Koach Gavra is not identical to Maisa Ha'odim. It's not that this is Aramaic and this is Hebrew and it's the same concept. Koach Gavra means something over and above Maisa Ha'odim. So that's where the Chazon Ish got his idea from, that the Pashtus is that the only time the Gemara made a distinction between Koach Rishon and Koach Sheni is only in these three cases, by Ritziche and by Shechita and by Netilas Yadayim, where there's a halacha that we require dafke Koach Gavra. It's not sufficient Maisa Ha'odim. So there, Koach Sheni doesn't relate to me. It's not called Koach Gavra. But Maisa Ha'odim it is. So for purposes of baking the matzah lishma, you don't need that it should be Koach Gavra. There's no such requirement. All you need is that it should be Maisa Ha'odim. So even if it will be accomplished with the Koach Sheni, the Pashtus is that it should also be acceptable. There was a great Goyen who was killed by the Nazis, the Kozhoglover Goyen. He was the Raven Kozhoglov before the First World War. After the First World War, there was no more Kozhoglov. So he was always Rav. So then when the Lublina Rav, Meryl Shapiro, founded the Lublina Yeshiva, so he invited the Kozhoglover Goyen to be the Rosh Yeshiva by him. I think his brother donated money to the Gottesman Library. So I think the sixth floor, the 5A floor, has a photograph of the Kozhoglov guns dedicated in his memory. So the Kozhoglov Goyen has a volume of Shalos HaTshuvos that's called Eretz Tzvi. Not to be confused with a different sefer called Eretz HaTzvi. Okay. and his name was Tzvi. His name was Rav Pirsch. So in his sefer, he discusses machine tzitzis, machine-made tzitzis. The Gemara requires that the tzitzis should be made lishma. When you tie on the tzitzis on the garment, that's a machlekes, whether the kshir on the beged has to be lishma. But this, everybody agrees, taking the wool and making it into strings, that for sure, that says the Gemara, that has to be made lishma. So in Europe, they already started machine-made tzitzis. So now, when you go to the store, there are two kinds of tzitzis. You have machine-made tzitzis that cost $2, and then handmade tzitzis that cost $20, 10 times as much. If it's handmade, Maisa Yad, that costs much more. So the Kozhoglov Goyen has a tshuva about this, where the machine-made tzitzis are acceptable. Is it considered asiyah lishma? So he raises the possibility, maybe it should be called, maybe Koach Sheni is not a din only in the three cases where you need Koach Gavra. Maybe it's a din every case of Maisa Ha'odom. Whenever you need Asiyah Lishma, it has to be Maisa Ha'odom. So maybe since you push the button and the machine keeps on going and going and going and manufacturing all the tzitzis, so maybe only the Koach Rish, maybe only what happens in the first 5 seconds is considered Koach Rish, and whatever happens later is maybe should be considered Koach Sheni. So he says that this is incorrect. And the Kozhoglov, together with the Chazon Ish, together with quite a few additional poskim from the same period, from before the Second World War, they all write the same thing. There is an explicit comment made by the Magen Avraham in Hilchos Netilas Yadayim that this distinction between Koach Rishon and Koach Sheni only applies when you have what we call today in modern language Hasoras Hamoneya. What you have is you have a body of water, and the water pressure is always pushing down. But there's no place for the water to go because the dam is closed. When you pick up the dam, I didn't push the water. I remove the dam, so the mela, the water pressure has a place to push the water. So the mela, the water goes out. So if all I did was hasaras hamoneya, then and only then the Gemara makes a distinction between kerach rishon and kerach sheni. What if I didn't pick up a dam? What if I take a barrel of water and I tilt it on the side? And because it's tilted on the side, it keeps on flowing. The water keeps on flowing. Then someone puts his hands under the barrel of water. Is that acceptable for netilas yadayim? Is that called kerach rishon or kerach sheni? So the Magen Avraham says it's all kerach rishon. The difference between kerach rishon and kerach sheni only applies in that case where you do hasaras hamoneya. So that's what the Kashuk Lover writes, and the Chazon Ish writes as well, that when you have a system, when you have a machine system, and you push a button, that's not hasaras hamoneya. You're completing the circuit, and you're causing the whole thing to start to function. So there is no kerach sheni. Everything is considered kerach rishon. The matzahs that are baked, they leave the matzahs running for 12 hours, and then they clean out the machines. That's another question. If they leave the matzahs baking, functioning for 12 hours in a row, and then only then they clean out the machines, and maybe some of the dough accumulates, maybe turns into the chametz, and then it falls into the matzahs. That's another problem. That's an issue of chametz that I didn't plan to talk about tonight. But the issue, that was the main issue when the original Gedolim, Rav Shlomo Kluge and the others came up, Divrei Chaim, and all the Gedolim came out, the Galatiani Gedolim came out against the hand matzah, the machine matzah, their main tine originally was that it's an issue of chametz. So today that's much less of an issue. But as far as the issue of Asiyah Lishma, that those wanted to tina that you're dealing here with the kerach sheni because you push the button and it goes for 12 hours. So that's what they all quote from the Magen Avraham and Hilchos and Tilos Adayim, that's not correct. This difference between kerach rishon and kerach sheni is only a problem when you're doing hasora samanea. But if you're completing a circuit and then you set up the whole system that everything should function, everything is considered kerach rishon, and everything is considered the kerach gavra, there's no problem. What you have to be careful about is, however, the following. They push the button, they let the machine go for 12 hours, but then you're going to run out of water. The machine doesn't have all the water there, so someone has to come bring some more. You need maim shalono, fine. So someone's going to have to come and pour some water in the machine, in the container in the machine, so she can continue to function. Or you have a ton of flour, but the flour is going to get used up before the 12 hours are up. So in the middle of the 12 hours, someone in the factory is going to notice that they need some more flour. Someone's going to have to take some more flour and put it in that part of the machine that it should continue to function. So the Gemara calls that kodol lochitza. At the time that I push the button, the one who pushes the button has to be a Jewish person who's obligated in the mitzvah of matzah. One can only create lishma if you're obligated in the mitzvah. A non-Jew is not obligated to eat matzah. A non-Jew is not obligated to wear tzitzis. So even who's going to manufacture matzah, he's going to make tzitzis, he's going to make the strings for tzitzis. By definition, it's not considered lishma. The mazel is that women are obligated to eat matzah on Pesach night, despite the fact that it should be considered a mitzvah seser shas magram. In Europe, for so many generations, they used to rely on the women. Almanas used to bake all the matzahs. So if the din would have been that women would have been potter for matzah, so the Rabbein Tam would have said that women would be possible to make matzah, because you need asiyah lishma. Whoever is not obligated in the mitzvah, al pi din, can create lishma. So the mazel is that the women are mechuyev in matzah, so the women can create lishma. So the shaila is, when you push the button, the one who pushes the button has to be a Jewish person who's obligated to eat matzah. So he says, I'm pushing the button to bake the matzah lishma. So whatever amount of matzah could have been baked because of the fact that I pushed the button, that's all called koyach rishon, and that's my meisen, I did it lishma. But if I know I'm going to run out of water in another 2 hours, I'm going to have to pour in more water, so that's called kololo chitzov. Isha mishum chitzov, whenever I harness some natural force, I'm harnessing over here the electrical force, the electrical power to bake the matzahs. So to the extent that everything could have been accomplished by the pushing of the button, that's called chitzav, that's called my maisen, I did it lishma. But if someone has to add on water later, someone has to add on flour later, so you have to make sure that the one who's adding on the water is a Jewish person who's mechuyev in the mitzvah of matzah. Or the one who's adding on the more flour has to be a Jewish person, he has to put in the flour or the water lishma. Otherwise, he can't declare that everything is contained, everything is a continuation of the pushing of the button. No. As far as when he pushed the button, it would run out of water after 2 hours. So that's called kodol lochitza. So that's what one in all the matzah companies that is a problem. They don't have enough water and they don't have enough flour at the very outset when they push the button, and they leave the machine running for 12 hours in a row. So the one who adds the water later, the one who adds the flour later, has to be a Jewish person. He has to say that he's doing that lishmor as well. Halacha lemaisa, many poskim are of the opinion that the machine matzahs are acceptable. And in fact, I never spent Pesach with Rav Soloveitchik, but he told the students that his practice was he would insist dafka on using the machine matzah for the siddurim for all of Pesach, that he felt that it's considered asiyah lishma. And as far as the Shema Mechimutz, to see that there are two parts to the mitzvah of Shmarta Mesamatzis. The first is Shema Mechimutz, to watch that it shouldn't turn into chometz. And the second aspect, which may be only midirabbanan, is you have to have an asiyah lishma. So as far as the Shema Mechimutz is concerned, so this we know for a fact, that if it's done by machine, there's a better Shema Mechimutz than if it's done by hand. If you have matzahs made by hand, it takes much, much longer. Last summer, I was touring Spain and Gibraltar with a group of religious people. It was a very interesting tour. And we were interested in visiting Girona, the city where the Ramban lived, because in Shulchan Aruch they quote the Tshuvas HaRashba. The Rashba was a student of the Ramban. And he writes that when they were learning by the Ramban, they used to knead the dough for the matzahs, Bebeso Shal HaRamban, in the Ramban's home. And then they would walk out in the street, and the sun would be shining, and they would walk down the block with the sun shining on the raw dough, and then they would bake the matzahs in the bakery, which is down the block. So Rabbi Shavel published so many different volumes on the Ramban, so he published a biography as well. So he writes that he decided to visit Girona to see if he can find the Ramban's home in the bakery. So lo and behold, the Ramban's home was there, and down the block, a bit of a walk down the block, was the bakery where they used to bake the matzahs. So that's why it says in Shulchan Aruch that you don't have to rush, you don't have to run, because the Rashba learned by the Ramban. And he writes they didn't run, they walked down the block. It's less than 18 minutes, so there's no problem. Yeah, but if you have machine matzahs, not only is it less than 18 minutes, the hand matzahs are also less than 18 minutes. But if you have machine matzahs, it's much faster than any of the hand matzahs. And there's much less of a chashash of chimatz. Dr. Belkin, in my time, was not appreciated. Dr. Lim was in the yeshiva when Dr. Belkin still gave the shiur. When I came to the yeshiva, I never knew Dr. Belkin was a maggid shiur, period. They called him the Rosh Yeshiva, we didn't understand. Since when did he become the Rosh Yeshiva? When Dr. Revel passed away, so there was a whole machlekes who should be the Rosh Yeshiva, and he was voted in as the Rosh Yeshiva. We didn't know that. We didn't know that. But then when Dr. Belkin used to say the Shir, Rabbi Yitzchak's yard sites, he always used to say from Rab Naftali, he always used to say the Ritter. So we saw he was Taka the Rosh Yeshiva, not just the president, he was the Yeshiva. Thank you very much.
We thank the Rosh Yeshiva for his words of Torah. We invite our guests this evening to please join us immediately outside for a collation, and ask the members of the family to please stay. We'd like to take a few photographs. V'chag kasher v'sameach. Thank you for coming.